income and they can actually do things with their kids. They can actually go to a nice restaurant once a quarter or whatever, right? We don't need hate here. I want to thank you for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. You guys are rock stars, and it's about time for the next show to come on. And sadly, I didn't look at the schedule, so I don't know what's coming on next. I'm not taking any calls, so if people are wanting to call in, I'm not taking any calls because the show's just about done. This big, beautiful bill is a travesty. And if the House, Mike Johnson wants to pass it, J.D. Vance wants to pass it, they don't care. The Heritage Foundation does not care about the American people. They're trying to change out current career federal employees with new people who are yes people, who are willing to fall in line with their way of thought, no matter how toxic it is. I appreciate you all for listening to me today babble on and on.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
And if you're not doing well, it must be because you're not managing your money very well. There's something wrong with you. That kind of thinking affected me when I was a divorced mom with 3 kids. I had $50 a month in child support, and I still could not make my budget add up.
I'm Suki Wessling of The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women. Produced with the support of KSQD in Santa Cruz, California. We tend to talk about economics as if it's a science like physics or chemistry. You are told that the Fed is doing this or Congress has enacted that in order to benefit us, the everyday people who take part in our economy. But the truth is, economics is closer to a story we tell based on assumptions we make about what's important. Economists act as if the traditional plot we call the economy is made up of immutable elements, like there's a formula we can plug numbers into and get the answer.
Shame of shames, I ended up having to go to the welfare office. I was working full time. I was going to school, but I couldn't make my budget work and I needed help and knew it just to feed my kids. I thought there was something terribly, terribly wrong with me.
But no, there is nothing wrong with you if the formulas don't add up in your household. Today's guest is not an economist, but she did write a book about economics, inspired by her observation that the traditional economic stories we tell ourselves leave out the experiences and needs of over half of our population, women as well as other marginalized people.
Hi, I'm Ricky Gard-Diamond, author of a book that was aimed at women and the economy. Got a nice review from Kirkus that said it was a smart, comprehensive economics guide with a feminist twist. And I love that feminist twist, by which I think they meant the title, which was Scroonomics, How the Economy Works Against Women and Real Ways to Make Lasting Change.
The title is definitely eye-catching. That's the first thing I noticed. I just read an article by you on the Mid Magazine website, and I think that's what caught my attention. It's like, oh, this is a good piece. And I looked down, it's like, Scroonomics, what's that?
Well, it's actually a word I had to invent because of the widely applied but unspoken economic theory that women should always work for less or even better, for free. That seemed to be everywhere, but no one was talking about it openly.
Yeah. And what I'd like to do is, in this discussion, we're going to touch on a variety of ways of looking at this. But I thought I'd start by playing devil's advocate.
Okay.
And the devil's advocate says, more women than ever are working and working full time. A larger share of mothers with children under 18 are working. Women slightly outnumber men in the college-educated workforce.
Yes.
And in graduate programs, women now outnumber men 1.6 to 1. So, Ricky, what the heck is the problem?
Well, I think a lot of people view it that way. But let's take a look at the wage gap. It continues to be universal, whatever the industry or the work area, it's universal. And it doesn't matter if it's a female-dominated field or a male-dominated field, it is still a universal theory applied to women's wages. It doesn't look like that much when you're talking about 71 cents to a man's dollar, but when you do the, you know, multiply it out over a year's time, it adds up, which is what Equal Pay Day is always about.
There's research on all of this, of course. People can go look up the numbers. But one thing I read was what would happen to the U.S. GDP if we evened that gap?
Yes.
Which is astounding. The numbers are just astounding, shocking. And the other is that, isn't it true that there's also a persistently larger wage gap between women-dominated professions and men-dominated professions, and even larger still, women of color-dominated
positions? All those baked-in striations are there very much in the wage gap. When you look at white Latino women, the gap between white men and white women is something like 80 cents to the dollar. But when you look at a Native American woman, it's 51 cents on a dollar. Black women are 64 cents on a dollar. Latinas are at 54 cents on a dollar. And so those baked in differences within each of the work areas are still very apparent. For instance, if you looked at the healthcare industry, where women are like in the 80% of the workforce, when you look at that field, you're going to find white women in the management positions, and the lowest paid ranks are going to be filled by brown and black women. And that's just baked in across the economy. I hear a lot of talk about addressing, what do they call it, the post-colonialist economy.
just dipping our toes lightly into the weeds of feminist economic theory, it's important to be clear about the origins of our legal system, which derives from legal concepts developed over hundreds of years. When we create new legal structures, such as economic systems, we build them on top of existing law and very seldom do a wholesale reconstruction of what came before. And what came before was not great for women. American women were legally considered property until the mid and late 19th century. So women's labor in the home was a marriage benefit to a man, not valued labor provided by women. Like all the economic stories we tell, we've made a choice to continue to devalue labor that women exclusively provide, and there's no field of labor unique to people with uteruses other than pregnancy and birth. Ricky Gard Diamond points out that the gestation and birthing of babies is work. It's hard work that benefits our society, and yet we expect women to do it for free.
Women are not at the front of people's minds when they think about the economy. They think we're doing okay, and yet they aren't thinking about, here's one little basic thing. Women have to take off time and often work part-time because of their other responsibilities as birth givers and mothers. And the ones that still have their roles defined as, you know, caring and organizing the home front. We don't, the child care tax credit that was enabled during the COVID period showed us that by giving poor families regular check, a monthly check, raise kids out of poverty at, you know, something like half the poverty rate in the nation. And yet we couldn't afford to maintain that. So that homework that women do, that birthing work that women do, continues to be invisible in this economy. And in fact, we not only do this work for free, we pay for the privilege. In European countries, the average cost of giving birth is $10,000. And most of those costs are covered by national health insurance. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, the average birth cost is around $30,000. So we pay for that privilege.
I want to point out something that you said that was really interesting. You said that there's a universal theory behind women's experiences being included from the economy, and that's provocative.
Well, I don't know that it's an unspoken theory, but I had to call it a theory because it's so widely applied. It's so universal. Mm-hmm. So I named it a theory. I don't know that it's written anywhere except in Scroonomics, but...
But it does seem to be.
It does seem to be. Yeah. And it's clear from the work that women are still expected to do and are the work that is devalued because it's done by women and because it's concerned with, you know, caring, taking care of, maintaining relationships, making sure everybody has dinner and are happy at the dinner table, although we're not eating at the dinner table as much as we used to. But nevertheless, women carry that weight to a greater degree. I mean, all of the statistics point to that. And that devaluation of what's really at the foundation of any economy is not only hurtful to women, but also to the whole economy. I think you said earlier that what would happen to the GDP if we just addressed that women's pay gap? We'd see this enormous growth. And yet the past 20 years, we haven't seen that pay gap diminish. It's actually grown a little bit. Why is there this resistance to doing what seems to be a fairly simple thing? Mm-hmm. Now, young women are approaching equity in pay to a greater degree than was true for our generation, but it remains there and it's supported by statistics in every realm.
One of the things that I know that we saw was what happened to the economic health of the country when poor families received some support during the pandemic for their children. Can you talk a little bit about why it would actually help our economy as a whole if mothers were supported that way in general?
It's important that we look at the work women do as birth givers. The USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, puts out an annual figure for what it costs to raise a child to age 18, not counting college costs. And it's up to about $750,000 per child. Women's wages, and in fact, parents' wages combined, have a difficult time paying for children. So it's not surprising that we have the high rate of poverty for kids in this country. So during COVID, we sent them a monthly check based on their work, and it cut the poverty rate for kids in our country about in half. And yet, in the same way that we resist equalizing women's pay, we decided that, oh, we can't afford that. We're not going to do that anymore. And wouldn't you know it, our child poverty rate is a little bit higher than it was before COVID, and it's right back where it was before. So the solution is staring us right in the face, and yet we choose not to fund that.
Ricky Gard Diamond's book, Screwnomics, points out that economic theory is written to sound as if it's inevitable, but it's not. As a society, we make choices about what we value. I asked how women's experiences, both traditional and modern, are reflected in the economic picture presented by our government in its assessment of such numbers as the gross domestic product or the unemployment rate.
They're just not in the picture anywhere. They're not a commercial activity. We only fund commercial activities where profits can be made. That's a deliberate result of our We only create dollars from debt. If you look at the dollar bill, which is signed by, you know, it has presidents' pictures on it, and it has the treasurer and lots of signatures here. But at the very top of the dollar bill, it says Federal Reserve Note. Well, what is a note? A note is essentially a bill, which is why we call these dollar bills. They are created out of debt. Debt means profit, means the interest from loans that are made. That's what we choose to fund. Mm-hmm. So women having babies or forest growing trees don't count until you can cash them in on the labor market or cut them up into lumber.
It seems to me that there are a number of ways that how we measure our economy doesn't really align with people's real experiences. One of the things that is happening in the economic picture right now is that economists are saying, we're getting a real handle on inflation, things are looking good. But households are not saying that.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that misalignment? What's missing from what economists look at?
Inflation is one of the definitions in Screwnomics that I have right up front, and I think it's one of the hardest things to understand. It has something to do with that added-on interest that commercial loans demand. The added-on interest from issuing so many loans over time very reliably moves the money up from people who don't have enough money to buy a house with cash. They have to borrow it. It moves that money up to those who have enough money that they don't need, that they can loan it to you. And so there is this general sweeping up of resources. For a long time, economics has been divorced from politics, largely the work of the neoliberals who came into vogue when Reagan was, these are Reaganomic economists.
You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Suki Wessling of the Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women.
For Home Economics 1. Today's lesson is cooking for your family.
Ricky Gard Diamond acknowledges that although expectations in our culture have changed, the numbers have hardly budged. In households with a female and male adult couple, the women, even when they are the main breadwinner, provide more of the free labor, more childcare, more house cleaning, more grocery shopping, not to mention all the labor when it comes to birthing. In same-sex households, which show more equitable distribution of home tasks, a two-woman household is likely to be paying double the penalty for devalued labor outside the home, whereas a two-man household benefits. On top of that, Ricky points out, are the tasks that families can't hire someone to do, the emotional labor that is still more likely to be provided by mom or wife. So while men are making more money on average for the work they do outside the home, women are making less money not only for their paid work, but for the unvalued work that goes unnoticed in our assessments of the economy.
I think those are really invaluable tasks, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing it. It absolutely is essential if we want to have a society that isn't at war with each other. It's an invaluable work, and that's usually what it's called, which is a way of giving mom a Mother's Day card, but not rewarding her for her very real work. In a way, the child tax credit was a way of rewarding parents' work. I've got wonderful, loving men in my family, and I'm happy to see that, to be able to count on that. But they'll tell you that that work isn't particularly valued in the larger world. Men who have paternity leave in their corporation very often choose not to take it, because if you take it and you go take the full length of it, somehow that devalues you in the same way that women have been devalued.
Ricky Gard Diamond's education in economics started with an experience she initially viewed as shameful. One of the things that I loved about your book, Screwnomics, was you interwove your own story into this book about economics.
Right.
So first, what led you to do that?
Because my own story is so full of economic mistakes. I've learned a lot. And I wanted to share in an accessible way how important it is for more women to know about the nuts and bolts of the economy and why they're avoiding it and why all of us are really discouraged from thinking about the economy in that personal way. We're expected to think about money in that personal way because that's our personal responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing well, it must be because you're not managing your money very well. There's something wrong with you. That kind of thinking affected me when I was a divorced mom with three kids, and I had $50 a month in child support, so extra money, and I still could not make my budget add up. And shame of shames, I ended up having to go to the welfare office. I was working full time. I was going to school, but I couldn't make my budget work and I needed help and knew it just to feed my kids. I thought there was something terribly, terribly wrong with me. When I went to the welfare office, I saw that I was so much more privileged than most of the women that I saw there who were Black women who had more children than I had, who weren't dressed in a, you know, a business suit. They didn't have earrings on. And I was just so aware of a peculiar situation that I felt myself to be in. I really didn't understand until I later moved from Michigan to Vermont, where I lived for the past 40 years, that there, Republican and Democratic women had formed a coalition and were beginning to look at this wage gap thing. And that's when I learned that I was making 51 cents on a man's dollar. And that was why my budget didn't work. It didn't work even when I had welfare help. But, and that remains very true. In fact, it's even more true since the Clinton welfare reform move that has made welfare even more difficult than it was when I applied for it. But I also learned that, you know, we have these mythologies about the welfare queens who always are Black, right? But most families that are on welfare are white, and most of them are, in fact, working, but they still can't make their budgets work. Now, why is that? Is that because they're all personally irresponsible with their money management? Or is there something more systemic going on? Another statistic that I came across just recently was that there are 30 million Americans who faithfully file their taxes with the IRS and cannot pay those taxes and have to go into some sort of negotiation with the IRS. 30 million Americans.
Wow.
So what is their problem? Are they bad money managers? I don't think so. There is something really systemic going on. And yeah, there are the latest statistics just out the other day was that the top 1% in this country now own as much wealth as the entire middle class of the United States. I mean, the numbers are in the trillions. Those are even more difficult to think about, but those numbers are huge. Just imagine if we had that 90% tax rate, we'd be in a much better shape, and maybe we could afford that child tax credit monthly check if we did that.
I was really struck when perusing the videos of meetings available on An Economy of Our Own's website that these women are sloughing off a lifetime of training in the belief that economics is a dry subject. I remember being told that over and over, and I still see references to it in articles about economic issues. But if dry means that it doesn't connect with us on an emotional level, this is clearly untrue. The reality of economics connects with every facet of our lives. It's simply the way we've chosen to present economics that comes off as less than personal. These female economists, however, are making it personal, and they're doing it in a touchy-feely personal way that comes off as nothing short of radical. And it occurs to me that the really radical thing here is that for as long as men defined economics as a dry matter of numbers and widgets, that was actually the radical thing. To take the humanity out of economic theory, to take half of the human race right out of it by defining their work as not worth quantifying, that's the radical choice. Because let's face it, the numbers tell us that the unquantified work traditionally done by women at home is deeply entwined with our economic health. Ricky mentioned the 2021 Child Tax Credit, which sent up to $3,600 per child to households. That money was literally the first time that parents, and again, let's stress that this work is still mostly done by women, were paid for work done in their homes. The numbers showed us exactly what happens when families have enough money. Fewer children went to school hungry, fewer children came home to an empty, cold apartment. All that money cycled into our economy and bolstered a huge burst of economic activity. And following the money further down the road, we also know that well-fed, cared-for children have fewer acute health care and mental health care needs. They do better in school. They are less likely to turn to crime. They are more likely to continue their education. And all the numbers tell us that all of those things are good for the economy. The bottom line is that the touchy-feely stuff has a direct effect on the economic life of our country. Those old dudes and their dry numbers were trying to ignore over half of the work that built this country, the unpaid labor provided by women and the low and unpaid labor provided by people of color. The way these women are approaching economics is less radical than simply obvious, sensible, and realistic. Our system of not valuing women's work equal to men's costs this country money. Lots of it.
Well, I guess like anyone, I say, how the heck did I get here? And it's a long, convoluted story, but I think I'm here because I still have compassion for what I saw in that welfare office. And even within that office, the layers of complexity, privilege, layers of privilege that were evident, you know? One of the mainstays of our organization and An Economy of Our Own, and in my own research, is including diverse voices, because in a way, I think I not only want women to claim their own economic story, but their own economic expertise, because if you're alive in this country, you've been using it. And it hasn't always matched up with what the Dow is saying about the economy. But I think when women get together and talk about what's going on in their lives and understand that what is so difficult to understand is actually deliberate and not all that complicated when you really look at it closely is important. Oh, that first kiss. My gambling days are gonna end like this.
in the bank.
Thanks to Ricky Gard Diamond, author of Screwnomics, for sharing her life and insights about women and the economy. The song Money in the Bank by Carcy Blanton and Home Economics by Mrs. Grossman and Monty are from freemusicarchive.org.
But am I strong enough for this? You know the odds were laid when you played that kiss. Oh, oh, that first kiss. My gambling days are gonna end like this. Never want enough to fill my tank. But that first kiss was money in the bank. Money in the bank.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women at www.babblery.com. The Babblery is produced with support from K-Squid in Santa Cruz, California. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Suki Wessling in beautiful Santa Cruz, California. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio KBOO Portland.
Another politician sitting far away. This is the battleground.
Hi, I'm Jeff Rosenberg. Tune in